says, "Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. Until I come, devote yourself to the public reading of Scripture, to exhortation, to teaching. Do not neglect the gift you have, which was given you by prophecy when the council of elders laid their hands on you. Practice these things, immerse yourself in them, so that all may see your progress. Keep a close watch on yourself and on the teaching. Persist in this, for by doing so, you will save both yourself and your hearers." This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Hey, my name is Heath Kendrick. I'm our student minister here at Riverdale. And I'm so excited and so blessed to be able to open the word with you guys this morning. And so, I want to start off this morning by asking you guys a question. Who is the most influential person that you've ever had in your life? You've got them locked in, right? It didn't take you long to figure out who it was. Who was that person that was a role model for you? Maybe it was because you thought, man, this person's the coolest person that's ever lived. I want to be like them. Maybe it's somebody that you just naturally gravitated towards. That person is probably like your hero, right? You just want to be like them. And so let me tell you about a guy that was in my life or came into my life when I was 14. So backstory. Our church, growing up, I started going like before they actually started the church up. We started on like the soft launch of the church. And so we got to be a part of Midtown Church in Benton, Arkansas. And so we've been there since the beginning. My family still goes there. So I got to come up through their kids' ministry and then got into their student ministry. And so for the first 3 years of my student ministry time, I had a youth pastor, great guy. And then all of a sudden, on a Wednesday night, he said, "Hey, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm moving to Texas." And it was like, "All right, bro. Like, that's it? Like, you didn't give us a pizza party or nothing? Like, this is it. You're done." And so I remember there was a 9-month span after that where our church, our student ministry had grown pretty large. We had grown to like 170 students on a Wednesday night. And then he left, and then it was like within this 9-month span, we were down to like 20-30 kids. And I remember sitting there as an eighth grader going into ninth grade, man, I don't know why, but the Lord's feeling or telling me like I can help do something about this. I didn't realize then that was a call to ministry. I had no idea what that looked like. But then a guy named Casey Winstead rolled in the summer of, I can't remember what year it was, but summer in between my eighth and ninth grade year. And within 2 weeks, we had a conversation and he was like, "Hey man, I see a lot of potential in you. I feel like, have you ever thought about being like a call to ministry? Have you ever thought about what that looks like?" I'm like, "Dude, I haven't even told anybody this. So for you to be saying this to me, like, I actually have thought about it, but I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have anybody to teach me a way." And so Casey was like, "Okay, well, come on, and I'll teach you what it means to be a student pastor." And so since then, I still talk to Casey probably once a week, but he's taught me pretty much everything that I know about what it means to be a student minister. But he also taught me so much more than that. He would invite me into his home, say, "Hey, I'm going to pray. I'm not going to change anything about my life. I want you to just see how it rolls." And so he would pray in front of me with his family. He would teach me things about what it looked like to be a good husband, a good godly husband. He taught me what it looks like to be a student minister. And then he taught me about, like, hopefully one day I get to use this part of it, but he taught me what it looks like to be a good godly dad. And so Casey, he would do all this stuff, but he wasn't just teaching me what it looked like to give my life to the Lord, but he taught me what it looks like to actually walk with him and chase after Christ. And so today in our passage, we're looking at Paul. Paul is talking to his disciple Timothy. And so if you look in Acts chapter 16 and also in 2 Timothy 1, you'll see that Timothy joins in on Paul's missionary journey because he absolutely loves the Lord. Now, Timothy, he didn't start just loving the Lord just by chance. He had a mom and a grandmother that were pouring into him each and every day saying, "Hey, this is the way that we're going to walk. We're going to walk and chase after the Lord." And so Paul sees that, and he desires Timothy to be a part of his team. And so during this time, Timothy, people who are a lot smarter than me think that he was probably mid-teenager to early 20s. So he's probably somewhere like ninth grade to early college. And so he joins in and he begins following Paul. And then Timothy, as he's walking with Paul, he's learning the ins and outs of ministry, but he's also learning about life, what it looks like to follow Christ. And so I believe that Paul teaches Timothy two things in this text that we can latch on to this morning. I believe that he teaches us about discipline and discipleship. Disciplining yourself and discipling the next generation. And so let's look back at verse 12. Paul tells Timothy to not let anybody despise him for his youth, but to be an example for other believers. Now, some of you are probably thinking, I definitely don't fit in that youthful category anymore, so this isn't even talking to me. It still is talking to you. Oh, so keep your ears open, Danny. All right, so he's saying, man, we need somebody to set an example for the other believers. So that's what we're going to focus in on today. The only way to set an example for somebody else is if you're actually doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, right? If you want to be a neurosurgeon, you're not going to come to Life Point Church and come job shadow me for a week. You're not going to do it. A lot of people are going to die if I'm the neurosurgeon. And so if you want to be a neurosurgeon, where are you going to go? You're probably going to drive downtown, go to Vandy, sit in there for several years, rack up a lot of student debt, and then eventually you'll be a neurosurgeon, right? You're not going to come and follow somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. And so when I think of this, I think of, man, you've got to be devoted to actually doing the job. And so when it comes to those who follow Christ, there are things that we're called to do. Our job is not done after we give our lives to the Lord. But then the next part of this is a lifelong process called sanctification. And so this is a pursuit of holiness that starts from the moment that you give your life to the Lord until the moment that you get put in the coffin. It is a pursuit after looking like him. And so Jesus, he's the one that does all this, right? He's the one that does the purification of our heart. He's the one that does the sanctification of our lives as we move forward. And so he uses things like spiritual disciplines to implement this into our lives. And so back in January, student ministry, we walked through spiritual disciplines. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's getting disciplined in the spiritual sense. And so when I typically think of discipline, I typically think of my mom wearing me out after I'm doing something bad, right, when I was a kid. She used to discipline the heck out of me, right? However, the discipline that we're talking about today means to train oneself in something new. In the context of the Christian walk, this means reading the Word. Not just reading it, but studying the Word. It means praying, fasting, gathering with the body, serving others. We are training ourselves to become more like Him through these disciplines. Now, spiritual disciplines aren't just for when we feel like it, though. They are a gift from God that has been given to us to sanctify us. A lot of times when we get into some spiritual disciplines, it feels like you know, in January when it rolls around, we start unrolling out the Bible reading plans for the year, and the massive amount of pressure that comes on, you're like, I've got to take this on because everybody around me is about to do it. And it feels a lot more like these spiritual disciplines are like pushing you towards Christ when in fact they're a gift and it should be pulling us to him. We should be running to go and do these because it's going to make us more like him. And so as we pursue Christ through these spiritual disciplines, Christ promises a few things for us. He says that he will sanctify our speech. He's going to sanctify our conduct, the way that we love others. He also says that he will give us a deeper faith and create in us a pure heart that chases after him and away from the world. If you look in John 3:30, it says, he must increase, but I must decrease. So the more that you dive in to spending time with him in the word, the more that you see this in your own life. His words will become your words. The way that he treats others will be the way that you treat others. The things that you desire will no longer be the things that you desire before Christ, but it'll be the things that you desire because of Christ. He changes us. He increases as we decrease. So discipline isn't in place to keep us from doing other things, but instead it's to show us the abundance of life that God has given us. We have a mural outside that talks about John 10:10, which is he gives us life abundantly. Spiritual disciplines are in place so that we can see that and experience it abundantly. At times, it's going to be difficult to wake up and get into the Word. At times, there's going to be difficult when you're going through a tough circumstance to pray and say, Lord, thank you for this. A few years ago, my father-in-law, hey, most of y'all know Carl. He laughs, and y'all hear it on the thing all the time. He's got a very distinct laugh. But man, Carl, he got diagnosed with cancer. And so I remember being really upset with the Lord. I'm like, I don't want to read my Bible. I don't want to pray. Like, you're the one that did this. Why would I want to do this so I can be more like you? You're the one that allowed this to happen. But then the Lord changed my heart through that and start diving into the Word, start praying. I'm like, oh, Lord, thank you for this. Because now not only do I love you more, I also love my father-in-law even more. And then all of us together as a family are pursuing after Christ because of this situation. There's going to be times in your life that it is difficult to chase after him and dive into spiritual disciplines. But I promise you, he is going to do what he has always done. Discipline isn't in place to keep us from doing other things, but it's to show us the life abundantly that he has given us. If you're seeking to see the Lord move in your life, you have to be willing to discipline yourself. There's so many groups and resources available here at LifePoint. We have this awesome class coming up in August. I'm really sad I don't get to be a part of it. But on Wednesday nights in August, if you're like, man, I don't even know how to read the Bible. I don't even know where to start. If you're tired of like flipping open and then pointing to a word and you're like, here we go. This is a place for you. We want you there on Wednesday nights. If you're a student, Tuesdays at 11:30 for the next 2 weeks, we're walking through how to study the Bible so that when school rolls around, you're like, hey, I know what I'm doing in my quiet time before I go to school. I'm putting on the armor of God before I go to school. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm studying. We want you guys there. And if you're like, man, I don't have an opportunity to come on Wednesday nights or I'm not a student, there's life groups, there's people around that are willing to teach you how to study the Bible. On Monday nights, our women's groups meet during the school year, and they will teach you, ladies, how to study the Bible. Tuesday night, Shannon is leading a men's group. He's going to teach you how to study the Bible. That's how much we believe in the Word, and we believe that it will change your life. That's right, Danny, come on. All right, so if you're a student in the room, I'll see you on Tuesday. No excuses. But Paul isn't telling Timothy all of this so that he can just keep it to himself. He also tells Timothy that after he disciplines himself, he is also to devote himself to the teaching of others of how to live like Christ, how to follow Christ. And so Paul tells Timothy to use the gifts that God gave him to disciple the next generation. So although most of you aren't a pastor, we're all called to leading others to the feet of Christ. We're all made entirely different. We all have different giftings, and that's a sermon series for another time. But the thing is we are called to use the giftings that the Lord has given us to then give others the abundant life that Christ has offered us, we can share it with them. And so if you're sitting here thinking, I have absolutely no clue where to even start with this, let me tell you about what's happening in our Next Gen Ministries. Pre-K through 12th grade, we have kids and students that are hungry for somebody to show them how to follow Christ. Within the last year, we've had 10 students and 6 kids, and maybe some more. Those are just the ones we know about so far. 10 students and 6 kids. 16 lives in our Next Gen Ministries have been changed for the sake of Christ. Man. That's not only a massive praise and something that we should just all be excited about as a church, but it's something that is a call to action for the church. We have 16 people within our Next Gen Ministries that need somebody like you to show them, hey, follow me as I follow Christ. We don't necessarily need somebody to get up and preach. I need a job. I don't need somebody to come up and preach. We need people who are willing to do life-on-life ministry. What I mean by that is as you're practicing disciplining yourself, you're going to show them how to implement that in their lives as well. We need Christ followers at Riverdale to tell others to imitate me as I imitate Christ. Church, our lives need to be worthy of saying, if you want to be more like Christ, then you follow me and I'll show you how I do it. Most things that we learn aren't taught, but they're caught. Have you ever noticed small children, they pick up on some similarities from their parents real easy, right? Maybe it's their facial expressions when they say something. My mom used to tell me all the time, oh, Lord, you look just like your dad. Maybe it's the way that they deal with certain emotions. And you're like, oh, I see that. Maybe it's the way that they repeat words that you say when you're telling somebody else that they're a bad driver when they walk into preschool ministry on Sunday and mortifies you, right? Kids don't have to be taught those things. They learn them by watching. Church, this is much like the way that we learn the way that it means to follow Christ. If your kids are watching you read the word at the dinner table, guess what? They're going to be like, I want to be like mom and dad. When your kids walk out in the morning and you're sitting at the breakfast table, you got your bowl of cereal there and they're coming out to make theirs and you've got your word open. They will have a desire to be like you. Maybe it's when you're driving in on Sunday morning and you've just had a wild time trying to get your kids ready, trying to get everybody out of the house because you're trying to make the 9:30 service instead of just coming to the 10:50. Maybe you're struggling. You're like, man, I don't know how to do this. But then you get in the car and you turn on worship and you turn on LifePoint Music's album and you're like, man, I'm ready to worship the King of Kings. Kids, come on, sing with me. Set an example in your homes. At 14, I knew it was important to read the Bible. I'd been saved for 8 years by then. I knew it was important to read. I just didn't know how to do it. Casey, my student pastor, showed me how. He let me see what he was writing in his journal. He let me watch him underline stuff and say, hey, this is why I'm circling this word. This is what this means. This is why I'm doing this. He let me see how he highlighted stuff, underlined stuff. He let me sit at his dinner table when he was having meals with his family. I watch him pray over his family. I watch him lead his family. He didn't have to give me a sermon on how to do those things. Instead, he invited me in to show me what the Lord was doing through his discipline. Our church needs you. Our church needs you to show the next generation what it looks like to follow Christ. We are being called to action, church, to go and serve in Next Gen Ministries, to share the gospel with students and kids that are hungry for it. They desire it. The Lord has placed you in your specific job, in your specific neighborhood, and given you specific people around you in your life so that you may be able to tell them, hey, this is how the Lord is working in my life. Let me show you how to do it in yours. This all starts with discipline in your own life, and then it flows outward in the form of discipleship of others. Imagine I have a pot, right? A nice ceramic pot, and it's got some cracks in the side of it, and I pour water into it. It's not just going to water the plant that's inside of the pot, right? It's going to pour out the water on the sides as well. Church, that's a lot like the Christian walk. I know each of you have been through different things that make you the person that you are today. Maybe it's a different sin struggle that is cracking your pot. Maybe it's a, you name it. I walked through this situation and it affected me. The thing is you're not trying to hold all the water into your pot. You have to be willing to use those cracks to let the Lord pour water on you, and then you pour out onto the grass around you. This all starts with discipline in your life as the Lord is pouring into you, and then it'll flow outward in the form of discipleship of others. If you're like, man, that sounds great, Heath, but I have no idea where to start. No idea where to start. We have these handy dandy QR codes on the back of every other seat in front of you, and you can scan that and it will show you, hey, this, it says, I would like to serve. Great, click it. Next thing it's going to say is preschool, kids, students, hospitality. It'll give you several options to serve. Those aren't just places to come. We don't need just placeholders. We need people that are coming and saying, hey, follow me as I follow Christ. We need people that are devoted to sharing the gospel to the next generation. We need people that, as you're holding doors for people that are coming in, they need to see the joy of the King of Kings that has been placed in your life as you're holding a door. You're not just a Walmart greeter. You are here for a reason, and it's to show the people around you that he is worth it. The obedience to disciple the next generation will make a lasting impact in their lives. But let me tell you this, it doesn't just stop with that kid that you're discipling. One day those kids are going to have kids. And guess what? The impact that you make in their lives now are going to make an impact in their kids' lives in the future, and then their kids' lives in the future. The impact that you have the ability to make doesn't stop here. I don't know about you, but I want tons of people to come to know Christ because I'm the one that's sharing. That's probably selfish of me, but I'm all in. We need people that are willing to say, hey, I'm going to disciple you so that you can then disciple your family. And the truth of the matter is that may feel extremely uncomfortable for you. You're like, man, I don't know about holding babies. It kind of freaks me out. But thing is discipleship doesn't start when they get to sixth grade and start rolling into student ministry, walking into Engage, or then walking into basic training when they get in high school. It doesn't start when they go off to college and then they get plugged into a BCM. It starts when we start discipling kids and praying over kids that can't speak, can't walk. It starts in preschool. We need people to disciple babies in preschool. When kids are bouncing off the walls back there, we need people to show them, hey, there's life that's better than this. It's not all about candy and just seeing how wild I can be today. It is about, man, I want to chase after him. I used to be just like you. Now look at me. I'm chasing after the Lord. You can do it too. There's students that when they come in here on Wednesday night, they don't want to do anything but talk to their friends. Guess what? My best friend up here reading the word, I don't have to talk to him because when we're in here together on Wednesday nights, we're both focused on worshiping the Lord. We're not worried about talking to each other. We need people like that who are going to show other people, hey, this is so much better than anything else going on. We need people that are ready to make a lasting impact on the lives and the future generations of other families. There will be things that come up for you that say, man, I can't make it. I can't make it on Wednesday night. I can't make it on Sunday morning. But the Lord commands our lives to be a light for others for his glory. Don't let your excuses help you miss out on what the Lord can do in your life. Church, discipline in your life should and will lead to the discipling of others. In other words, Christ has given you the opportunity to know him on a personal level so that you may be able to take the gospel to other people and so that they may know him on a personal level. If you do not know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, there is no better time than 10/23 on July 21st to come and know him. It can start now. You're obviously not going to know what to do in disciplining yourself because you don't even know why. I urge you, I beg you, to come and see the King of Kings. He sent his one and only son to die on the cross for you so that you didn't have to be a slave to your sin anymore. You don't have to be tied down to, man, I used to do this. I'm not worthy enough. It doesn't matter because he already paid the price for you on the cross. And he's sitting there. He died on the cross, was buried for 3 days, and rose again, defeating sin and death. You don't have to be tied to it anymore. And then now he's ascended, and he's sitting at the right hand of the Father waiting to come back for you. I don't know about you, but that's a king that I want to serve. And I want the people that are walking with me, students that are walking with me, to know, hey, if he's serving that guy, I want to serve him too. Let me show you how. We need adults in our rooms to get after it. I will be out the door and to the left. I would love to share with those of you who do not know him, how he's changed my life and why he can change yours. And if you do know him, this is a team effort. And what we're going to do is we're all going to come together and disciple the next generation of believers. And as we wrap up, I want to read Psalm 78:4. So if you'll turn there. This is our verse that we typically will read, or we put on all of our next-gen shirts for Riverdale. When we do our next-gen conference in January, I'm sure we'll implement this some way. But there's so many times that the Lord tells us over and over that discipling the next generation is so important. Let me read Psalm 78:4. It says, "We will not hide them from their children, but tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders that he has done." Church, will you join in with us and tell the next generation, this is what he's done in my life, and he can do it in yours. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for today. I thank you for this morning and the opportunity that we have to open your word. Father, more than anything, I'm thankful that you sent your son to die for me on the cross, and knowing that you will and continue to be faithful to save others. Father, I pray this morning that those who are believers in the room, that you would create a desire in us for deep discipline so that we may know you and may look like you. Father, I pray for the next generation of students and kids and preschoolers. Father, I pray that you would save them, that you would change their lives. And then, Father, I pray that the rest of our church would come around them and show them what it looks like to imitate you. Father, if there's somebody in here that does not know you, I pray that you would open their eyes to see you for the very first time today. Father, as we continue to worship you, I pray that this would be a fragrant offering to you. It's in your holy and precious name I pray. Amen.